Good evening. As we speak, our nation faces a multitude of challenges.
Thus, on Tuesday evening, commenced Barack Obama's first address to the American public from the sober, hallowed, quintessentially presidential confines of the Oval Office. Presidents usually choose other settings as thematic backdrops, notably George W. Bush declaring victory in Iraq aboard an aircraft carrier.
In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
But when the issues are grave enough, the Commander-in-Chief speaks to us from the center of his command.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
It is a crisis of confidence. It is a crisis that strikes at the very heart and soul and spirit of our national will.
Today is a day for mourning and remembering. Nancy and I are pained to the core by the tragedy of the Shuttle Challenger.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts.
Enter the Gulf oil spill. Obama recognized a historic opportunity akin to the banking crisis when Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel sagely observed, "A crisis is a terrible thing to waste." So, with the dual goals of demonstrating that he was on the case and selling his energy policy built around capping carbon consumption, Obama sat at his massive desk and, in a mere 18 minutes, covered the spill, the administration's response, the environmental implications, BP's liability, and the notion of Deepwater Horizon as a historical turning point, an offshore Pearl Harbor, arousing a complacent society once and for all to free itself of carbon dependency. "Yes, we can," the president said, "because we have history on our side. We have American pluck and ingenuity on our side. And on top of that, God will hold our hand."
The blessing is that he is with us always, a blessing that's granted even in the midst of the storm.
The notices were not very good. John King of CNN suggested it was too political. Roger Simon on Politico.com said it was insufficiently detailed. John Dickerson in Slate said it was insufficiently confrontational. And RedState.com, pulling out the long knives, compared it to Jimmy Carter's so-called malaise speech. Youch. But while pundits across the board agreed the speech was a dud, it seemed they couldn't quite put their fingers on the problem.
"I thought it was a great speech if you've been on another planet for the last 57 days, but what was needed tonight?
Didn't feel any energy in the first two-thirds of the speech in which he talked about cleanup. He's not a cleanup guy. He's a guy who dreams and who changes the country.
Executive command. And I thought that was the purpose of the speech tonight. Command.
What if the dissatisfaction had less to do with the text than the subtext, or more accurately, the subconscious? Having used his Politics Daily column to predict the substance of the speech, pretty much point by point, Tuesday night, Walter Shapiro noticed something disconcerting about the look of the thing.
"I think that there is a reason why, in selling his health care program, for example, he didn't use the Oval Office address. In talking about his Afghan policy, he didn't use the Oval Office address. I really think they realize that this is not a setting that shows him off to best advantage. Somehow, he looks small."
Yeah, behind that massive piece of furniture, this vital, dynamic, telegenic president indeed appeared slight, gangly, almost adolescent. Was that the President of the United States trying to reassure and persuade us, or the Secretary General of the Model UN?
"Here we have the worst environmental eco-catastrophe facing America, and we are talking about how a man looks sitting behind a desk. I hate to lower it to that level, but we all know, for better for worse, such atmospherics tend to be important in forming political perceptions."
But of course these things matter. In his campaign, Obama had tried once in a TV commercial to approximate White House trappings, but quickly abandoned the technique. There, too, he had looked diminished, sapped of the power, the the electricity, and the almost spiritual command he brings to a podium. In his Politico column, Roger Simon wrote, quote, "Maybe using the Oval Office upped the ante too much. Maybe we expected too much." Right, and maybe we were disappointed, even though we weren't quite sure which expectations hadn't been fulfilled.